Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to The Ruck. I'm Malik Lowe and I've been asked to come back off the bench to host this week's episode. There's been some confusion over the replacement card that was handed in to our producer because under tactical and injury, Owen Slot appears to have scribbled a new box marked a few days in Devon. Anyway, that's the one that he's ticked, and as Owen works out what to do with his scones, we've plenty of rugby to discuss. I'm joined this week by Stephen Jones, Lawrence Dallaglio and Jack Willis, the Watford England flanker, to pick through a weekend of high drama in the Premiership, Kyle Sinclair's Lions call-up, the Springbok squad, and just who Eddie Jones might pick for England's summer tests. First things first, Ben White has just been added to the England squad for the European Championships. Ben White, the Brighton defender, not Ben White, the Leicester scrum half. Yeah. But it did get me thinking, if you could pick one rugby player to join the England squad for the European Championships, who would it be and why? Now, I should give you a bit of time to think about that. We'll maybe come back to the end, but it could be a few interesting contenders on that one. So let's start with our special guest, I suppose. Jack, hello.
Hi, mate. How are you getting on? Are you okay?
Yeah, we're well, thank you. How are you, more to the point?
Yeah, no, good, thank you. Rehab's been going well the last few weeks and just chugging along nicely, really. It's nice that the weather's picked up, although I'm stuck in the gym most of the time and looking out with envy out of the gym window. But no, it's been all right, thank you.
Well, when we first spoke after you did the injury, you were kind of looking at a long stint on your own. And as much as you want anyone to be in that injury room with you, you actually have a couple of other players on with similar injuries. Does it in some way help to have Paolo and Joe Launchbury going through rehab with you? Is it a sort of a, can you lean on each other?
Yeah, massively. I think Paolo's having his operation in the next couple of weeks, I'd imagine. But Launch, myself, Ryan Mills and Theo have been sort of chugging away each day. And although I'd wish that it would be just me for the whole season, I'm on my own, so that everyone else is fit and raring to go. Unfortunately, that's not the way rugby is, but now I've got a little group around me. It's always quite nice because you can lean on each other, have a bit of a moan when you're feeling a bit down, and you sort of share a common interest, really, especially with Joe and I having fairly similar injuries. Both did our left knee, and a lot of things you can compare. And as we move forward later down in the rehab, it will start to get competitive in terms of our gym and fitness and other bits and bobs around it, and keep each other motivated.
Motivation was quite a key thing that you spoke about at the start of this journey, a journey that you've been on before, sadly, back in 2018-19. But one of the things you decided to do was to start a sort of a video diary and to write some columns detailing what you've been going through, just to give yourself something to focus on. How's it been? Have you managed to stay upbeat and motivated, because you were sort of aware that there were going to be some difficult times along the way?
Yeah, I think there's always going to be tough days. So far, I've actually found that doing the documentary has been a really, really cool thing to do. And just, it's given me another distraction away from the fact that I'm not playing rugby and doing what I love at the moment. So it's been really enjoyable to have that alongside what I'm doing. I've also been working really hard on the business, the Rock Cap side of things that I've set up, and it's just allowed me to have my mind focused in other areas. So I can go into training, work as hard as I can on my rehab, my fitness, weights, and then I get out of there and I can just switch off, because it's hard in so many other aspects. This recovering from this knee injury is a 24/7 job, because I get home and I've got to have my leg up, I've got to make sure I'm icing, I've got to make sure I'm sleeping right on it. There's no time throughout the day that I switch off. So having things that can take my mind off it whilst I'm doing those things, like icing, sat on the sofa, it's really nice to be able to drift away from it a little bit.
I think so, one of the things that fans and the media don't really, we don't ever get to see is the life of an injured player. We look at who's available to play at the weekend. We look at who's going to be picked. And if someone's not available, we just say, well, Jack Willis is injured. He's not in contention. No one ever really gives any thought to the grueling process of 7 days a week, constantly, as you say, your mind is never off it. Is that as much a mental challenge for you to overcome as a physical one?
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that, actually. I was listening to Sky Sports News and I suddenly saw that Alexander-Arnold's out. And the headline, sort of as they read it out, was Alexander-Arnold's out. Who else is going to be there to replace him? And it's just, it's so cutthroat that, and it has to be that way. And that's the talking point of who's going in next. But when you do get injured sometimes, it's quite literally, right, well, who's on the next conveyor belt and who's in? And it's that player is then tossed aside and they're in the background. And I think that is a thing that a lot of players struggle to deal with. And yeah, it can be one that challenges you sometimes, but I think focusing on yourself, focusing on the best way to get yourself back is what drives you on, really.
And there's a lot of Lions talk coming up. There's an England squad about to be announced this week. Do you, on that note, do you ever come to terms with what you're missing and how do you come to terms with it?
I think, look, obviously my dream would be to play for the Lions at some point. I don't think I'd sort of prove myself enough on the international stage to necessarily be in contention, to be honest with you. That's my honest opinion of where I was at. I think for me, I was much more focused on really trying to kick on with England and push into what is a very competitive back row. And yeah, it's a hard one. I would have really, really been working as hard as I could to try and be involved and in contention for this summer tour with England. But it is what it is, isn't it? You can't just sort of think about these things. It doesn't make you feel the best if you do. And that's probably the only times when I do feel a bit down is when I'm thinking about those types of things. Whereas the more you can keep your mind off it, keep your head clear, is the better, I find.
You've got a tight family that helped you through it. We saw you at the game at the weekend giving your brother a big bear hug after his heroics. Has that been good for you to channel some of your, I guess, your rugby energy through him and support Tom's endeavours, because he's having a great season, isn't he?
Yeah, no, the last couple of weeks he's really stepped it up. I thought he was unreal at the weekend and sort of dragged the team through after what was a pretty poor first half. But yeah, look, I love watching him play. I feel very privileged to be in the same team as him, and it does just add another element to it. Obviously, I care so much about all my teammates, but your brother's your brother, isn't he? So it's another level, and yeah, I love watching him play, and when he plays like that as well, it's pretty special.
And we'll talk about that game in a second. Just where are you? You're about 4 months into your rehab now. Do you have a time frame yet? Do you have a comeback date set yet, or is it a bit early for that?
I think lots of dates tend to get chucked around with different staff, different doctors. They have sort of timelines in put out there. I think roughly this injury should have been sort of 9 to 10 months is what I said, what the surgeon said to me after my surgery. So I think that would take me to sort of Christmas time, November, Christmas time. Yeah, but for me, you've got to take each day as it comes. I had a review at a couple of weeks ago, my 3 month review with Andy. He was really happy. And I'll have another one at about 6 months. And then that's when that 6 month one will start to steer towards more of a timeline, I think, because you get a real good grip of how the knee's looking, where I'm at. And if he's happy, then I can start to kick on with running and things like that. And yeah, hopefully won't be a million miles off. But
yeah, the key is to tell these press that it's 12 months. And then when you come back in 7 and a half, they think you're even more superhuman than you are. It's 12 months, Alex, all right? and the boy will be back in about 8 because he's Superman. And listen, I mean, just to jump in there, I mean, I've been through this rehab, albeit 20 years ago, and it's brutal, absolutely brutal. So keep it going. Congratulations to you on everything you're doing. And you know, I'm fascinated by the fact that rugby's 24-7, and when you do get the weekend to spend off, you decide to go and watch a game of rugby with your brother there. But it was great to see you there, and great to see the reaction that not surprising the reaction that you had when he not only scored a try, his third of the game, but actually the winning try in the seventh minute of injury time. I mean, it was a properly epic game of rugby, that.
Do you find, Chad, that having been through it before, that you're better equipped for 9 months of not playing and having to be in the stands in Brentford and cheering them on and dealing with those dark days? Like you said, you know, you knew what was coming when you did the injury and the pain and everything. You understood. I remember you saying that, you know, when you're lying in hospital and it hurt, you knew what was coming pain wise, but it's preparing yourself for the dark days. Has that helped you cope with it?
It really is a 50-50 split. I think it helps with the fact that on a day-to-day basis, I feel like I've got like another level of knowledge and experience from my last injury. Little things that I did that worked, didn't work, that I can add to what I do on a daily basis. And then on the flip side, I feel like I'm in a really good headspace at the moment, which is great. But there are days where I think about the months that I've got ahead of me and that, or will I start to struggle like I did last time? Because I think last time round, I didn't really have anything else in place. I didn't have the business. I didn't have Rock Cap. I was just me. I was just a rugby player. And I kind of lacked a bit of identity around when I wasn't playing. I didn't really know what to do. And I did struggle quite a bit. But this time round, I'd be lying if I said I didn't have days where I was pretty gutted. And it was such a great day on Saturday watching the boys play and get that win. But there's so much of me that when you sort of get back and you sat at home after all the buzz had settled down, I do feel pretty sad that I'm not out there and not alongside him. It's such a cool feeling being out there, and games like that, they're just incredible moments you can't replicate in any other walk of life. So throughout this injury, I think I've learned lots, but there's some things that you just can't feel better with. Missing out on rugby and days like that is what hurts.
And last time we spoke, you talked of your determination to come back better and stronger and bigger and more powerful. Talk about being in a good headspace. Is that, those are the things that you're focusing on now. Have you made improvements already in terms of strength and size? Obviously, your ball carrying and explosiveness will have to wait a bit until that knee's stronger. But, you know, in terms of the aims and the ambitions that you set yourself through this period, where are you with those?
Yeah, I've been working really hard in the gym to put on a bit of size, but in a good way, not just sort of getting bigger for the sake of it. Because I think one thing that you can get distracted with is the most important thing is being functional on a rugby pitch. You don't want to just have arms out here and not be able to move still. So for me, being able to output high levels of strength and power is what's going to be important. I think it's a bit of a, as I'm out for such a long period, it's a bit of a process, it's a building process of muscle mass and strength. And then as you get to that final end, you can really start to add that power phase. And hopefully for me, one of my biggest work-ons was probably being a better athlete all round after going into England camp, sort of identifying that with the likes of Tom Curry, Sam Underhill. You realise the levels of physique that they're at. And for me, I need to get to that level and hopefully go beyond, because to compete with those lads, that's where I need to be. So yeah, using this as an opportunity that was sort of forced upon me being an injury, but I can definitely turn it into a positive.
Steve, you were at the game on Saturday, were you, the Wasp game?
Yeah, well, I said it was the greatest Premiership game ever played. And I then watched it again yesterday, just in case I hadn't gone completely over the top, and I still think so. I mean, if you're talking about entertainment, a brand new sporting venue for a start, which I thought was tremendous, right in an area of London where you're going to get loads of people, you know, floating voters maybe coming along into rugby. That was good. It would have been handy if I hadn't parked at the wrong stadium and walked around the old football ground seven times to try and find the bloody entrance. I thought, oh, this is not that great. The floodlights are really old. Anyway, I eventually got to the ground, but it was absolutely tremendous. And I have to say, you know, just listening to our guest, the professional rugby player these days, that people in the future will hopefully realise what they put into the game, you know, when the game has been financially struggling. But what Wasps had no price at halftime in that game. They had played badly, but fair play. London Irish had played ever so well. bloody well. People like Curtis Rohner and these guys were tremendous. They hit Wasp like a thunderclap at the start. And then, obviously, you, if you're a journalist on deadline, you then write your intro at half-time thinking, well, there's no way anyone's, you know, London Irish, Hammer, Wasps, you know, Wasps, shame. But by the time you get all that done, Wasps have scored four tries in the second half. It's just wonderful, both sides. And anyone who says, actually, that the defence must have been poor, they weren't, because they were some of the biggest hits of the season in that game. I'm glad that Jack's brother had a good game. It's very difficult if Jack had come on and you asked me, what was Jack's brother like? I can hardly say he was bloody awful, but he was absolutely awesome, and the back row as well. And the shift that some of these boys have put in, despite the injury list the Wasps have, was just beyond words. It was an absolutely great game and one of the great days of the Premiership. Absolutely loved it.
Jack, at half-time, Wasps were 33-10 down. Were you in the stand thinking, I bet Lee Blackett is giving them an absolute torrid time in that dressing room, or were you thinking it'll be pretty calm, they know where they've gone wrong? I mean, what were you thinking in the stand about what was going on in the dressing room beneath you?
Yeah, I think in my head I was thinking he would have every right to go mental right now. I think the stage we're at in the season and how important that game was, if he'd sort of gone full Alex Ferguson and chucking all sorts at them, I think it would have been acceptable. But speaking to my brother afterwards, I think he just said, look, two options now. We can just roll over and we'll be out of Europe, or you can go and show how much it means to you all. And that I think the boys did that, didn't they? They went out, and I think Lee was fairly calm with how he went about it. He literally said that's your two options, and see what you can do. And they certainly proved what it meant. And we got a very big game against a pretty fierce Leicester squad at the moment next weekend. So yeah, it's gonna come down to the wire, which is in Wasp fashion, isn't it? So hopefully we can squeeze into Europe and kick on like we want to next year.
It's been an up and down, sort of tricky season for Wasps, but that, you know, you're not helped by missing some big name players. So to get that fight out of them, in, you know, with I guess a European place to play for, but missing so many big names, does that show some good signs for sort of bouncing back from a tricky season next year?
I think so. I think it's such a weird one this season, the way it's been. I think we all came back from COVID with so much energy and such a buzz about us. It was game after game after game. The whole squad was happy because everyone was playing one game a week at least. And then you come into this season after losing the Premiership final, very, very short pre-season for us. And then it's been a bit of a lull, really. Emotionally, it's hard to get back up to where we were, I think. And there's been a lot of things going on in and around it as well, I think. You come off the back of a season like that, and it's always going to be a bit of a dip when you don't end up achieving what you want. And there's a lot of building going in around the squad. Had internationals away for a long period, as you say, a few injuries, a lot of disruption that goes in and around that. And hopefully we'll have a full pre-season now, can regather everything. And I think it'll be the first full pre-season really under Lee and the new S&C guys, so it's an opportunity for them to really put their marker in, and we can kick on into next season. I think, yeah, hopefully pretty much all of the injured crew at the moment will be back in and around the beginning of the season, maybe just after, but before Christmas we should have everyone back. So yeah, fingers crossed, we'll be trucking along.
What do you make of it, Lawrence? I mean, Jack mentioned that the Leicester game next week, Europe on the line. Leicester are going to be a pretty angry bunch after the way things finished in that.
They're always
remarkable
an angry
end.
Yeah, I mean, it was a. I have to say, just going back to the game itself, Wasps, London Irish. I mean, I was fearful for Wasps at half time. I thought. You know, because I spoke to Lee in the build-up to the game, and he said, "Look, this is our final. You know, we come out the blocks firing. We know it's all on the line. It's a must-win game." And I mean, the only thing they could win, they couldn't even win. They wouldn't have even won a raffle in the first half. I mean, it literally. I think they won two scrums. That was the only thing they won. Every other contest, they were comprehensively smashed off the park. And you know, you think to yourself, well, how can you just wipe the slate clean and come out second half completely different? Because it was actually the complete opposite of the first half. And in the end, they deserved it because they had the momentum with them. Obviously, I watched the Leicester game against Bristol. And again, they produced a fight back against a quality side like Bristol. And could have, you know, I'm sure we'll get onto it in a minute, could have and possibly should have won that game. So, yeah, listen, I think the benefit Lee and the boys have got now is that their destiny is in their own hands, which at halftime it still very much was, but you didn't expect it to happen. So to qualify for the Champions Cup, which will be a massive incentive for all of them, and it'd be great for the fans to do that against the Tigers at home, you know, with fans in the stadium is all you want, really. So you wouldn't want anyone other than Leicester, would you, coming up to see you? I mean, I know I wouldn't. So, you know, let's see if the guys can do it. And it's going to go right to the wire. Look, London Irish are still in the mix. They go down to Bristol. Bath somehow are still in the mix, probably more through COVID than playing well. And that's not me being biased. That's just a fact. It's, you know, they've been given 4 points, so they're probably happier than anyone at the minute. They host the Saints at the Rec. So, look, you know, Northampton Saints are already in fifth place. So you've got four clubs vying for the last three spots, which I think makes it really exciting for rugby fans, for everyone, because it's all on the line, really.
So go on then, Laurence. Try and talk us through what happened at the end of that Leicester-Wasps game. I was away with my family, was watching on Channel 5. I thought David Flatman did a brilliant job of trying to explain an incredibly complicated kind of technical rugby thing to a terrestrial audience.
Yeah, I mean, it is complicated. And in the heat of the battle, maybe coaches say things and do things and maybe, you know, everyone jumps to conclusions that the laws have been broken, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe they've, you know, it is difficult. But what I would say is whatever happened, it is not a good look for rugby, you know, to have two coaches arguing on the touchline. I mean, I guess in football, you see it every week, don't you, really? Coaches in dugouts arguing, you know, with each other, fourth official in the middle, kind of looking, going, oh, I'm not sure what to do here. But the reality is, John Alfoa is a wonderful player. Pat Lamb normally takes him off the field around about the 45th minute every week to preserve him because he wants to keep him going for a few more years, quite understandably. And you take him off for tactical reasons because, you know, if you make a tactical substitution, then you can bring the player back on should you need to. So it was written down on the card as a tactical substitution by the Bristol team manager. And then obviously when Leicester had a player removed at the end of the game, you know, they were looking to bring John Alfoa on, and Pat Lamb runs down and says, well, he can't come on. He's injured. And Steve Borthwick said, well, hold on a minute, it's written as tactical. And Ian Tempest, the referee, said that. But obviously, if Alfoa comes back on, then it means they have to withdraw another player because of the yellow card. And they would have gone into a scrum or a line-out with even less players. So I guess it leaves a sorry taste in the mouth because it kind of looks, for all money, like Bristol manipulated the situation to their advantage, as maybe my old Wasps team have done on many an occasion against Leicester, which is why the law was brought in the first place, I would imagine. So I'm not throwing stones in glass houses at all in any way whatsoever, but it wasn't a great look. It's one of those laws that needs tidying up because it's open to abuse. And you could sort of understand why Leicester were furious at the end of the game, but
Top thing is John Alfoa looked ready to run back on, didn't he? Jumped up, ready to go.
Yeah, I mean,
it didn't help the situation.
Yeah. I'm not injured. I'm fine. Yeah. So it's a really tricky one. I'm sure the RFU will look at it and they may want to review it but they have to gather all the facts and what we mustn't, you know. And maybe it's easy for us pundits to jump to conclusions and when we've got all the footage to watch and to look at. But what we mustn't forget is in the heat of the battle, even the best coaches and directors of rugby can get things wrong. You know, maybe he thought it was tactical, then he's injured, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, it needs tidying up, but it leaves Leicester aggrieved. But at the end of the day, I think Bristol and their individual brilliance was enough to win the game. You know, Harry Randall, Randrandra, Malins, you know, as much as Leicester have got all that aggression and thunder, they're still not quite there in terms of the individual brilliance of a side like Bristol. And the right outcome was Bristol won the game.
It seemed like like those two boxes that you tick, the tactical box or the injury box, according to Bristol, neither quite fitted, because he didn't go off injured, but he went off for player welfare protection reasons. So therefore, it was a voluntary replacement in that sense. But they'd already decided he had to come off because he was back a week earlier than usual because Carl Sinclair had dropped out.
And I suppose that, you know, listen, there is a scenario where a player can come off for tactical reasons and then he can be sat down and cramp up and he can't go back on the field. But as Jack said, John Alfer sort of jumped up and said, no, there's nothing wrong with me. I'll go back on if I'm needed type thing. So, it didn't create a great scenario. And it's a look that rugby doesn't really want to have. You don't want coaches arguing on the sideline when the game... And you felt for the referee, didn't you? Because there's so many things going on in his head, as there was for Wayne Barnes in that France-Wales game, you know, all those years ago. And they don't need to be sorting out, you know. I mean, you had Pat Lamb saying to him, if he goes on and gets injured, it's on your head. I mean, that was a little bit strong. Leicester Bristol at Matoli Welford Road, as we now call it, will be lively next season, won't it? I mean, just off the back of what happened in the last 10 minutes and let's, you know, fingers crossed, it'll be not just in front of 6,500, but maybe 25,000. It'd be fantastic.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There was another comeback on Sunday, Exeter 18 points down to beat Northampton, with concerns from that game over the fitness of Sam Simmons. And you know, as we record this Monday morning, we don't know the update. Rob Baxter was quite cautious about not kind of casting too much of a cloud over him yet. Twisted ankle, it sounded like. And that set up, lots of talk about the race for Europe, that set up next week a shootout, Exeter Sale for the right to... they'll meet again the following week and the right to host the semi-final.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it was a wonderful game at Saints. And, you know, for all those people that are sort of thinking, well, promotion, no relegation. Saints had, you know, apparently had nothing to play for. They're sort of locked in that fifth spot. They've qualified for the Champions Cup, but they can't make the playoffs and they can't really fall much lower. But boy, did they come out and play well against the Chiefs. And as you say, even with David Ribbons, sent off after 13 minutes, I thought they were magnificent. And in the same way as London Irish smashed Wasps in the first half, Chiefs literally were obliterated for 40 minutes. They went after them at the breakdown. They went after them at scrum. They went after them everywhere, in fact. And it just goes to show that if you are just a few things off mentally, and you're not quite expecting that you can be beaten against anyone. Anyone bar Worcester, I'd say. It was an incredible comeback again from Exeter, just to show that they're capable of doing that, but not unexpected. I mean, Exeter have got that capacity to score points very, very quickly, haven't they? And I think they were losing earlier on in the season about 11-8 to Worcester at half-time, and they won by 40 points. So, they've got that ability. They found it a bit harder this season, given how many international players that they've had picked, but they're still the team to beat for any side, I think. And they'll go to Sandy Park, and it'll be interesting to see what side Sale send down there, really, because when you're playing the same side twice in 2 weeks at their ground, it's unusual. It's an unusual thing to happen in rugby, particularly when the second game is a knockout for a place in the final. What you don't want to do is send your first team down there and get absolutely hammered the first time. So I suspect Alex Sanderson will mix and match his squad. He doesn't want to send a completely second team and be humiliated, but it'll be a fascinating contest. And it's going to go right to the wire.
They have, as we discovered this week, so they'll have five of the Springbok squad for the Lions series and on their books. Not all of them fit. Ludi Ega's not fit at the moment, but the Dupree brothers and Oosterhuizen and Faf de Klerk, you know, they've been powered by some Springbok beef, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a nod to Sale really for the quality that they've got. I mean, just on the South African squad, I don't think there's a huge amount of surprise in the squad that they've picked. They haven't played any rugby since the World Cup in Japan. Every player who was in Japan for South Africa has been picked, bar three of which have retired. One is injured. They've got seven or eight uncapped players, including Jasper Visser from Leicester. So, I think what Razzy Erasmus has done is scoured the world and said, doesn't matter where you're playing, who you're playing for. There's guys from Japan. There's guys from France. There's guys from England. You know, we need everyone we can to beat the Lions. So, interesting to see that they're playing Georgia twice before they trim their squad down to 35. I guess for them, it's whether they can get any meaningful rugby under their belts and the run out before they play. And anyone who thinks South Africa are suddenly going to play any differently to how they have been playing for the last, since the World Cup, I think that selection tells you everything. The only cloud they have is around Vermeulen, I guess, who picked up a big ankle injury over the weekend. And let's hope him and Sam Simmons are both fit.
There are a lot of players, Sale players and players from outside, but of course they have been playing week in, week out, tough rugby. And they will be amongst the people who are probably at their best when they come into camp. I don't think Georgia, God bless them, are going to be, they're not going to be provide the same sort of contest as Sale playing Exeter or Sale playing Bristol, etc. So that's given South Africa quite a boost to have so many people playing great rugby out of here. But just going back finally for my last word on the championship, on the premiership and what it's done. This season has been ridiculous. We knew it was going to be ridiculous when COVID first struck. But to have these guys playing at full bore right at the end is a fantastic achievement and says an awful lot about the character of modern-day player. I keep on about it, but they're just awesome. And rugby's so lucky with these guys, with the commitment they show. And even, as Lauren said, almost when there was nothing on it for Northampton, we're really, really lucky. And it could have gone the other way. It really could.
And I think the lift that they've got from their fans as well. I mean, Northampton were playing in front of their fans for the first time. And I think, you know, rugby is about emotion. It's a very, you know, and the connection between the fan and the rugby player is an integral part of creating that emotion, that two-way emotion. And I don't think we can underestimate that, even with only, 6,000 fans. It makes such a difference to the players. I'm sure it would have inspired the Wasp boys. It would have inspired Saints. It would have inspired all those players who are, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 points down in a game. You know, when you've got people cheering for you, and there were Wasp fans in Brentford, it gives you that extra lift that you might need.
Yeah, I think as well that what you touched on a bit earlier was the sort of credit to the Premiership, really, the quality. Someone like Jasper Vis has come over, not had an opportunity before, but he's proved himself in what is such a highly renowned competitive league, and it's given him an opportunity. I think proving yourself in a league like the Premiership can give you those opportunities to go back. So he's a very tough player to play against. I think he'll, especially if Vermeulen's not involved, it'd be interesting to see if he gets his shot, because he's a quality player.
On Steve's point about the, you know, the credit going to the players for maintaining those standards when there's no relegation, teams have little to play for. What is it that drives a professional every week to get that emotion, to get to that emotional pitch that is required to then go and give everything that's needed in a Premiership rugby match?
It's always a tough one, isn't it? There's probably the biggest and most crucial thing to managing throughout a week. Like Lawrence said, you can't be off it mentally. So it's from the sort of top down, really, the coach is working on the messaging for the week, because that can make a big difference. What are the clear messages that we're going after? How do we motivate the boys to nail those goals? And it has to shift different to change things up each week. But then you've got a lot of games that come thick and fast. Coming up with new ideas that are going to work can become difficult as well. But then a lot of it is on the onus of the player. I think for me personally, it's, I have aspirations for England. I have aspirations to make my family proud. I want to represent the club the best way I can, and I want to achieve something with Wasps. And for me, that is a a motivation that's with me every single day. It's what gets me through rehab. It's what gets me up in the morning. It's what it's the reason I play rugby. But everyone's got different things, and it's a big thing for coaches and DORs to manage. Is some players have that, some players love it, love and live and breathe it. Others do it because they love playing rugby and they're really enjoying it. But you need to get those lads to come along with everyone and really go for it. So it's always a difficult task to get that. But that's when you know you've got a special group, when everyone's motivated for every single minute of every game. And it shouldn't, for me personally, I don't think it should be hard. I think we're incredibly lucky to be doing this game and playing the sport we love.
Couple of things there as well, which resonate on listening to what Jack's saying, that players have to be self-reliant. You know, you can't be blaming any others, not wait for others to do anything for you. Just be self-reliant. And, you've got to have, from my own experiences as a player, you've got to have a real, hopefully, a vision of what you want your life and your career to be, and what type of person you want to be, what type of man you want to be, and have your own personal values, your own personal drivers, what's important to you as an individual to get you inspired. It's hard to do every game, I accept that, but you almost become quite self-reliant on that, and not wait for anyone else to give you that kind of motivation. I think the players that do that are the ones that come out and are able to perform at the highest level, not just 1 week, but absolutely every single week.
Fascinating sort of insight into the treadmill that from the outside it looks like just relentless matches, but rugby's not a game where you can just go in and cruise and come out the other side. You've got to be all in. And so, as I think, as Steve said at the start of the conversation, all credit to those players who find that emotional pitch every week and put themselves through it. And now that we can all go back into the stadiums and watch, that connection is palpable. As I know there was a family connection with you, Jack and Tom, but I was at a London Irish game the other week, and just, I think that stadium is brilliantly designed for the acoustics. Exeter, they were playing Exeter, the Exeter fans were there, and there was a real connection with the fans. The stadium's tight to the pitch. Yeah. You just feel a whole different, the game moves to a different level when the fans are in.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's nice. I'm sure Tom's the same. I think it's no coincidence that two of his best games of the season have been the last 2 weeks where fans are back. I think him and I are very similar in the fact we're very emotional. The way we play, we care a lot about having the people around us and wanting to represent them. So when you can hear those fans, your family's in the stand as well, it really, really genuinely does make a difference. And something that I'm very jealous of at the moment, but it's equally just as much of a motivation for me to get back out there.
That's a really interesting point, actually, because what I hadn't really considered a couple of weeks ago when fans came back, I've been there, and as you have, Alex and Steve, in empty stadiums, is it's the first time that mums and dads can watch their sons or daughters play. That's pretty special. For some of them, it's been over a year when they've missed that. I mean, my mum didn't miss a single game. She probably would have snuck in somehow under COVID restrictions anyway. But she, I'm quite serious. And I think for the players themselves, they have an understanding and an appreciation for the people that have given them the privilege of becoming a top rugby player. Whether that's parents, brothers, grandparents, rugby coaches, teachers. And I think for those people to actually be part of that situation for the last few weeks, I think it's just given everyone a massive lift.
So I think as well that Jack was saying about there's a full pre-season this time for the guys, and obviously there's going to be a few Lions coming back who may or may not be tired, but I just think the potential of the league next year. I've been very, very critical of Premiership rugby and the way they've run things, but next year with Saracens back, if Saracens get through their doubleheader, Saracens back with London Irish really, really, coming strong, as I think they will. Wasps are going to have players back. It could be an epic. It could be one of the biggest seasons there's been. If they're allowed to keep their players just a little more without Eddie taking them away every bloody week, I just think the Premiership could have its finest season next year commercially, crowds-wise, and in terms of standards. So, and I just think it'll be a great season. So, wouldn't say I'm looking forward to it already, almost enough rugby for one season, but next season is going to be epic, honestly.
Jack, one of those players who is now going on the Lions is Kyle Sinclair, who was the biggest omission from the original squad and has now received a call-up with Andrew Porter being injured. But we saw how emotional he was, how desperately disappointed he was to originally miss out. That has obviously fueled some recent performances and will no doubt fuel him through the tour. What kind of a character is he in a squad? You've been in England squads with him. He's quite a reluctant player to do interviews. When he does, he's fascinating, and he's got opinions on the game, and on the game's reach, and on issues beyond rugby that are really valuable and worth listening to, and do the game a great service. But he doesn't like doing those interviews very often, so we don't really see a huge amount about what he's like as a character in the squad. What does he bring to a team?
Yeah, I think he was one of the guys that everyone, you sort of have a perception of everyone going into games, and he's always quite a gnarly player to play against and really gives it everything. And then you go into camp and you realise what a lovely bloke he is, first and foremost. For me, especially my first camp, he was incredibly welcoming when I didn't really know loads of lads that well, and it was my first camp, and he sort of put an arm around me a few times and often helped where I needed it and just had a chat with me, which was great. And then also he's a really big leader amongst the group. He's obviously got lots of experience now and a really sort of validated international. So I was gutted for him when he didn't get into the squad, but he's worked incredibly hard to get back involved. And I think that's the thing with rugby, that sadly, and as a positive, there's injuries, there's change all the time. So your opportunity is only, it could be minutes away. A couple of people could drop out in seconds. So keeping yourself at the top of your game and being ready for it is paramount, really.
I remember a few years ago, Owen Slot went to Harlequins to see him, and they spent an hour just talking about scrummaging and his almost photographic memory of the big scrums in his career. For him, going to South Africa would be just the perfect challenge, wouldn't it? Particularly after the World Cup final and what he did get the chance to do on that stage.
I wonder why Slotty didn't have a clue about what.
Yeah, what was Slotty? What does Slotty know about scrummaging? He's never mentioned the scrum before.
Exactly, but you're absolutely right. I mean, look, there's the South Africans, as you know, believe that they are the best scrummagers in the world, and they will be targeting the Lions, particularly after that World Cup final, where they really went after England right from minute one. And so it's going to be a huge contest, in that area. And you look at the locks that they picked. I mean, it looks like a horror movie just in itself. Just that cast of locks that they've got is just. There's so much power in that team. So Carl's going to be a big part of that, and it's great that he's back. And I can't remember. Jonesy will probably know better than anyone, but. Sadly, when I went on my first Lions tour, there were seven guys that ended up being replaced. Here we are. We haven't even got to South Africa yet, and there's already one been replaced, and there'll probably be a few more as well. So for all those guys on the periphery, I think there still remains a great opportunity to be part of the tour, and really, really looking forward to it.
You do feel sorry for Andrew Porter. I think he's a real good player, a real strong lad. Possibly not an extravagant talent, but down there, I think he would have done well. So I'm sure Kyle will fill his boots brilliantly, but you do feel sorry for these guys but at least he's young and he's got a chance to come in 4 years' time.
As Jack said at the start, that's an important thing to remember, because as great a chance as it is for Kyle, it'd be very difficult for Andrew Porter being at home watching a Lions tour that he knew he could have been on. We should just finish off with two quick things. One is there's an England squad named this week for the summer. I mean, Kyle was being talked of as a potential captain, which I guess demonstrates how far he's grown as a leader in that setup. He won't be there. Eddie Jones is advertising for a new attack coach, and is talking about a new look squad for the summer. Is there anyone? I mean, Jack, you are allowed to pick your brother. Is there anyone you're hoping to see in that squad that you're excited to see get their first chance with England this summer?
Obviously, I would love to see Tom involved. I think a performance like last weekend could give you a shot. He's sort of had a couple of sort of injuries early on in the season and been in and around it, playing some really good rugby, but really picked it up the last two games. So could be an opportunity there. From the Wasps squad, I'd love to see Gabriel Ogre, our hooker. I think he's an incredibly skillful player. Worked so hard on his scrummaging, his lineouts coming along, because it's something that was a big work on for him. But also physically, he's starting to put in some bigger tackles. He's starting to chuck himself about around the park. He's someone I'd love to see involved. And then for me, I know Tom West was in and around the last squad, but I'd love to see him get a cap. I think he deserves it as well. I think he's been fantastic this season and been, as you say, Lawrence, there wasn't much going for us in that first half, but Westy was certainly dominating at scrum time, and he has done all year. So that's obviously such an important role as a prop. That's your number one job, and he does that to the best of his abilities. But yeah, there's a few. I think Marcus Smith for me, again, been around training, it was an apprentice. I'd love to see him be involved as well as Jacob, and have those two really going at each other, because him and Jacob could really push each other. Similar players in some ways, different in others. It could be quite exciting to have them training against each other.
I think of all, I mean, look, we have to remind ourselves that 4 years ago, when Eddie Jones took the squad to Argentina, albeit a very different rugby landscape than maybe playing the USA, Canada and Scotland, admittedly. But Sam Underhill and Tom Curry made their debuts. And Tom Curry has 33 England caps now, you know. His brother Ben Curry was picked in that first test to play and obviously got injured, and he doesn't have one cap yet. So I think he's got a bit of catching up to do with his brother. And I think Ben's been going pretty well for Sale. I like the looks of Harry Randall. I think Harry Randall's been very unlucky with England. I think I'd like to see, looking forward to seeing him play again. You know, he's scored a try on his first return since January. So I think he's got a lot to offer. And I think there's a whole group of sort of young wingers that they might go and choose from. Maybe even Freddie Stewart might get a look in. He's been outstanding for Leicester. Wasps own Charlie Atkinson, I think he's quite a good utility player that might get taken. So yeah, look, there's so much talent available for Eddie Jones to look at. I understand he took England training under 20s a few weeks ago and sort of, you know, got them all in a huddle and said, look, you know, a couple of you guys could easily be in the World Cup, you know, in a few years' time. It doesn't take long now for players to really push on through. So whilst it's not Argentina, and I'm sure the guys would love to be travelling there, it is an opportunity to play Test rugby in an England shirt against quality opposition. So I'm really looking forward to it.
And as I always say on these occasions, finally, what has Josh Bassett got to do to get a looking for any representative team at any stage? So the last 3 years, he's been the most dangerous winger. His defence and his tenacity has improved beyond measure. And what has he got to do to get anywhere near an England squad?
Maybe he could be your pick for the England Euro 2020 squad, like I asked at the start, Jonesy.
Okay, no, I doubt it, because he's not a footballer.
Okay. Which rugby player, let's go back to the start, which rugby player would you pick for that squad if you could?
For the England football squad?
Yeah.
Well, it's easy. Tom Willis. How are they going to stop him?
I wouldn't. He's got two left feet. There's no chance.
That'll do him. If he's got the ball at his feet and he's charging up the field, who's going to tackle him?
Yeah, well, definitely better when it's in his hands. That's for sure.
Stick him in goal. Right.
Maybe that's not a good idea.
Jack
and Robson, that we did have a bit of fun. Although a lot of the props fancy themselves earlier on in the year when we had a bit of a we had a couple of weeks off. I can't remember the reason. Couple of weeks off from games on a Monday morning, had a mess around, bit of five aside, and Dan Robson's pretty handy, I have to say. I'd back myself, but unfortunately one of my legs isn't working fully at the moment, so can't make it.
It's funny, isn't it? You always hear with these rugby players when they start talking, oh yeah, I had trials for so and so, and you know, Crystal Palace. Yeah, of course you did. Yeah, you were so good they took you on. Yeah. Basically, you were so good they told you no, football's not for you, rugby's for you, mate. Yeah. I mean, we all want to be professional football players, let's be honest, and if you can't be a professional football player, then yeah, you play rugby, and if you can't catch, then they put you in a boat and you end up being a rower. But the reality is that I would take Johnny Hill, because I'm a bit concerned about our goalkeeping fraternity at the Euros, and I think anyone that size could just could get in goal for England, because I think we might need to stop a few goals.
Guys, listen, it's been a great chat. Thank you very much for joining us, Jack. I look forward to catching up with you soon. Keep going with that rehab. Good luck with it. We can't wait to see you back playing.
Thank you, Steve, and
Lawrence, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Good luck, Jack.
Cheers, guys.